You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show.
Jim, thanks for having me back, and thanks for everyone listening in.
How are insiders dealing with the proposed 25% tariffs on Canadian products going to the U.S.? Proposed, theoretically.
Well, let's first take a look at what the American insiders are doing in it, because I think this tariff issue is going to be moving around over the next few weeks as Trump. Make statements here and there. I think right now everyone is just trying to get their heads around it in terms of what exactly Donald Trump plans to do. So I think at this point, Jim, it's some of the broader trends in global markets and in the U.S. market that has insiders behaving the way they are. And in the U.S., we were thinking that maybe once, if there was a Trump sweep, which effectively there was, of the House and the Senate, and of course the White House, that they might react favorably to that. But in fact, the selling has continued in the United States, and if anything, insiders have picked up their selling. And we see it notably also in the financial sector. So again, I think this is a case of American insiders looking through the politics and just looking at the numbers. And the numbers, you know, we see, so Albert Edwards had a tweet out, the U.S. market makes up about over 70% of global market capitalization. There's been a lot of money that's headed into the U.S. market over the past years, decades. It's been a long-term trend. And as we hit more uncertainty with respect to things like tariffs, like you mentioned, but also global uncertainty, and as interest rates appear to be at a new plateau, to use an old phrase, from a few decades back, the propensity of insiders to sell is a lot higher in America than it is to buy. And that's just a simple case of them taking money off the table. It does not mean that we can't have a Santa Claus rally here for a few weeks, because insiders are responding to strong price momentum on the upside. That seems to be getting exhausted on a multi-year basis. Whether it continues or not for a few more weeks, it may very well happen that way. Hard to say one way or the other, but again, insiders are looking at things like, I think, you know, Apple, which is the largest company in the United States, trading at in the world, I think, certainly North America, trading at trailing PE of 38. That means investors are expecting really good things from Apple, yet, you know, there's indications that their sales are hitting headwinds in China. And it's being, you know, already a multi-trillion dollar company. How is it really going to be able to grow its revenue at strong sort of startup level, high growth level paces? Investors are signaling yes, but insiders are signaling probably not.
How are insiders viewing what's happening in Canada?
Canada's completely kind of different story. We're seeing, instead of a propensity to sell, we're seeing an inclination to buy. And in fact, we did see some profit taking as stocks hit new all-time highs here in the fall. But as we've kind of hit some headwinds here in the energy and resource area, insider buying has picked up again. I'm just looking at our Inc. indicator, which looks at the number of stocks with key insider buying versus the number with selling on the TSX, and it's almost back to 100%, where it's even. And this is quite encouraging given the strong run that Canadian stocks have had so far year to date. Canadian insider index is up over 20%. That's a strong run, and it's nice to see insiders are, you know, still so constructive. And we've seen energy insiders being quite optimistic, as optimistic as they've been in years. And again, doesn't mean they're optimistic about all the politics and the problems, you know, and the uncertainty with OPEC. It means they look at their share price and they think, you know, they're signaling in general, I mean, that there's different situations on a stock-by-stock basis, but in general, they're signaling that Canadian oil patch stocks are undervalued and that the return prospects over the next few years should be pretty good. So that's encouraging, and we've seen an uptick here as gold has kind of wobbled with the Trump election, kind of a knee-jerk reaction. We talked about that. We actually, in our show in October, Jim, you and I discussed that we, if Trump were to win, that we would see some volatility in gold because you'd have the usual suspects coming out talking about a stronger dollar. That's indeed what has happened. But I'm happy to report that Canadian insiders are seeing this wobble as a buying opportunity for the most part. Yes, there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, the sentiment towards Canadian resource companies, whether it's in the mining or in the energy space, is pretty upbeat as we head in into year end.
So the Canadian resource sector, so that's mining, energy, anything else?
Well, those are the I mean, those are the big ones. Basic materials, you know, in that basic materials area, you've got lumber and a few other smaller elements. In within energy, of course, you have uranium. So again, but that's kind of a smaller group. The mining and the diversified mining are big ones, and yeah, the we're seeing a lot more buying than selling. But that's primarily, I should say, being driven by some of the smaller producers. We are seeing some profit taking in some of the larger names that have had good runs, but we're also seeing some pretty broad-based buying as well in some of the smaller names. So if you have the stomach for the, for mining, it's something to take a look at. And it, and certainly, as I mentioned, that the energy being led by the oil exploration and natural gas exploration and production group seems to be quite strong. So lots of optimism there in terms of the months and years ahead.
What's your advice who are trying to adjust between a Canadian American portfolio? Is there a new balance, or do you have to sit back and wait and see where all the dice roll out?
Well, I have opinions. I don't have advice to offer anyone, especially everyone has their own situation. And, you know, of course, it's best to consult with a financial advisor on any moves. But, you know, I mean, basically, the U.S. is a momentum market. It has good growth prospects in computing, AI. Interestingly enough, under Donald Trump, cryptocurrencies could get a boost with regulatory reform. A lot of those equities are actually in Canada. So we actually, you know, there's a kind of, for those willing to look at that space, there is an opportunity within Canadian crypto equities. And we're going to be writing about that later on Thursday in the Canadian top 20 mining and crypto equities report. Well, we have seen a number of stocks kind of perk up here in Canada, and it's all being driven by hopes of regulatory reform in the U.S. And that is so important in crypto because, you know, if you're building a project, a crypto project, you know, yeah, there's some certainty here in Canada on the regulatory front, but, you know, really at the end of the day, if the Americans aren't open to crypto and the setting a regulatory environment for crypto projects, it's really hard to get excited about the space because, you know, you've got Europe and that's always a bureaucratic nightmare. If you have the U.S., which we've had under the Biden administration, basically trying to shut the door on crypto, you know, it hasn't provided a lot of incentive for people to build and get excited about projects. So that appears to be changing. So keep an eye out on crypto equities. And, you know, in the U.S., I find that most of the crypto equities are miners, Bitcoin miners, and that space is kind of changing. There's a marriage taking place between Bitcoin mining and AI data center management, where the specialty of the crypto miner is sourcing power for crypto mining. They can apply that to AI data centers. So we're seeing some of that in Canada. We're seeing some of that in the U.S. So that's certainly a trend to watch in the U.S. So there are, you know, there are growth opportunities in the U.S. Of course, energy is a major driver of, I think, fortunes in the U.S. that is unappreciated. Certainly, they didn't talk about that under the Biden administration. You're going to hear a lot more about that under the Trump administration. There are fears that Trump is going to, you know, drive down the price of energy, which would not help energy producers. So ironically, of course, we had energy stocks not doing so well under the first Trump administration, but doing pretty well under Biden, because Biden made it, you know, constricted the supply, or tried to, until it started hurting him at the polls. And then all of a sudden, you know, he was didn't really mind if Iran was exporting oil to China. And, well, yeah, we're going to put these sanctions on Russia, but, you know, it's okay if India kind of takes the oil and then recirculates it on the global market. So, but generally speaking, a tighter supply situation is better for oil and gas producers. However, maybe offsetting that a bit is the Trump administration's likelihood of easing LNG export restrictions. So that's really good for battled natural gas producers on both sides of the border. And, you know, we have LNG Canada starting up hopefully early next year or mid next year. And if we have the Trump administration hurrying up with more LNG export permits, we're setting the stage for a possible, you know, uptick in sentiment towards natural gas producers in North America. So that's certainly a space we're watching as, you know, we head into 2025.
With Russia, Europe falling apart on their natural gas pipelines, should Canada be making more effort to get LNG to Europe, because they pay a lot more than Asia does?
You know, I think we've missed that. We've missed that boat. You know, I mean, let's see where what the outlook is. If we have a new government in Ottawa that's more open to pushing ahead with that, we'll just have to see. It doesn't look like we're going to have an election anytime soon. I mean, that'd be nice if we're talking in December and we're in an election campaign, because I really think Canadians should decide who they want in Ottawa to deal with the Trump administration. I think if nothing else, you know, Canadians should have that choice. And anyway, that's out of our control. We just have to play the cards as Canadians that we're dealt with. And so I think we've missed the boat on LNG to Europe. But let's see. Let's revisit that if we get a government that's more open to pushing through on those types of projects.
Well, waterways fall under federal jurisdiction, I believe. So why not just lay a natural gas pipeline under the St. Lawrence to a friendly Atlantic province and ship our LNG to Europe from there? You know, don't have to go through Quebec.
It sounds pretty expensive. And I mean, I'm not.
I mean, one of those LNG carriers carries between $100 and $300 million worth of product. You could pay down a pipeline pretty quick. I'm just saying.
I think your point. Sure. No, Jim, I think your point is where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
And there's been no will by Ottawa, and we've missed a massive. It's really, you know, I'm angry about it, because it impacts our prospects and our business just in terms of, you know, looking at opportunities. I'm angry about it for my kids, because we're leaving resources in the ground that could be taxed in the future and provide a more opportunity for them. So there's it's just been a policy, huge policy error, in my opinion. Other people think it's great that we're letting the Russians the Middle Eastern monarchies grab global market share in LNG. There's lots of Canadians who believe that. I think that's just stupid, but that's just my opinion. And other people feel differently. Fine, you know, let the dictatorships in the Middle East get the benefits, and we can sit here and we can ride our moral horse into, you know, declining GDP per capita, which has been happening in the past few years. If, you know, if Canadians are satisfied with that, then that's the trend will stay. But I think most Canadians are not satisfied with that. And another reason why I think we should have an election soon so we can settle this. You know, are Canadians happy with the types of economic decisions that have been taking place in the last few years? And is that what we want going in dealing with the Trump administration? Is that the approach we want to take? I mean, I think Canadians should have the say on that. I think we should have it now. And, you know, whatever the decision is, a decision. So, but let's have the decision. So anyway, that's a bit out of our control. In the meantime, we do see, regardless of who's in charge in Ottawa, better days ahead for natural gas, hopefully, and insiders, you know, seem to be reflecting that. So when we've written about natural gas in our morning reports in the last few days, so those who are members of the Canadian Insider Club on Canadian Insider or Inc. Research, make sure to check those out because we have written about three natural gas names, two Canadian-focused, one globally-focused, because Europe, you know, does have challenges. In the medium term here, probably we've seen natural gas storage levels fall. So they're still vulnerable. And, you know, that solutions are being provided by entrepreneurs in the industry. And we've got some in Canada that are very, very good. Our resource sector is very, very strong. And the people in the resource sector are great, smart, hardworking. I wish I could say the same about our politicians in Ottawa, but you know, let's fortunately the entrepreneurs in the Canadian oil patch are investable. You can invest in them, and you know, right now we're seeing some pretty good opportunities.
How many days a year do our politicians work? A handful? No other employer would put up with it. And Canada's federal politicians are the second highest paid in the world.
Well, I mean,
are they worth it?
Work and being busy, right? I mean, I think all our politicians are busy, but are they very effective? Again, I just look at the outcomes, and the outcomes are declining GDP per capita. That's the outcome we're getting. We're, you know, the average the MP base salary, I believe, is $200,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Let's have an election. That's how I respond to that.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, how well have your Canadian insiders done over the last 10 years?
Well, Jim, you know, we were talking before the break sort of opportunities and the political situation. It's really important to keep in mind in Canada that the Canadian economy, the fortunes of the Canadian economy aren't directly related to the stock market, because just the makeup of the stock market is so resource-focused, which is determined a lot by global events, and also the financial sector, which is more determined by domestic events, but a lot of that is monetary policy as opposed to fiscal policy. So back on November 14th, we had the 10-year anniversary of the Inc. Canadian Insider Index live. Now, Inc. has been around for 20 years, but the index has been around for just over 10. And so we had a 10-year live track record of the Canadian Insider Index. And why that's important is the index is a rules-based implementation of our Inc. Edge process, which looks at insiders and also valuations and price momentum. And so it puts our approach in a test framework, so that people can see the live track record of how the process has worked. And the index is focused on institutional type stocks, so it's, you know, not the smaller junior stocks that we often refer to, but the process also is applicable to larger names in Canada. And what we when we hit our 10-year anniversary, we found out that the Inc. Canadian Insider Index on a total return basis annually had delivered 11.7% annually. That's including dividends. And that's about 3.1% better than the comparable TSX composite, on the same basis. So that's, on an institutional level, being able to outperform the market by 3% annually is pretty good. And I would also say that, on September 30th, on November 15th, the Canada Pension Plan reported its quarterly results, and they provided their five-year annualized return. It was like 8%, which is like okay for a diversified fund, but it's not shooting the lights out. And to put in context, the Inc. Canadian Insider Index over the same period returned 18.6%, so over 10% better on an annualized basis than the CPP, which we've been told by our politicians and the CPP that, they have to invest outside of Canada, to get better returns. Well, I think maybe it's time, Jim, for our politicians to bring the CPP managers back to the House of Commons Finance Committee and talk about their performance and talk about why they see it's so important to invest so much money outside of Canada. And, I can tell you that, when they announced their latest quarterly results, they provided us with a list of their investments that they made, their recent investments that they made. It's quite remarkable, actually, how many investments they made outside of Canada compared to what they made in Canada. And to cut a long story short, of all the investments they made in the quarter they reported, exactly one half of the investment of their investments that they listed, and they listed a lot. They're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Multiple investments they made around the world, private equity, real estate, credit, U.S., Australia, U.K., Japan, Brazil, India, Singapore, Europe. There's one investment that they made in Canada and the U.S. in AI. So the Canada Pension Plan has been taking money from Canada, putting it around the world, helping other economies grow, all on the narrative that they're doing this to get better returns. Yet the Inc. Insider Index has outperformed the CPP substantially, during the past 5 years. And yes, we're an all equity fund and they're a diversified fund, but even so, this narrative that there's, better opportunities outside of the world, outside of Canada. There are opportunities outside of Canada, but it doesn't mean you have to, does it mean you have to go to the same extent that the Canada Pension Plan has done? I mean, I would like our $200,000 a year minimum members of Parliament to bring the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board back to the House of Commons Finance Committee to have a serious discussion about this. And they have not had the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board in front of the Finance Committee for a couple of years now. I think you have to go back to 2022. They've had two or three performance reports since then, and for some reason our politicians have not held the Pension Plan Board accountable. And I'm talking about accountable, not telling them what to do, not saying you should be investing in this province or that province, but asking them, why is it important to be sending so much money outside of Canada just to get kind of average ho-hum returns? Now, I think that's a discussion that Canadians deserve to hear and should hear. So I'm not holding my breath, but it's when you hear this story about, institutional investors have to go outside of Canada to get a better return. I'll just point out that one of the members of the Canadian Insider Index just this week, CI Financial, announced that they had received a going private offer from a BRICS country. That is right, a UAE-based subsidiary of a UAE wealth fund has made an all-cash offer to take CI Financial, a major Canadian investment wealth manager firm, private. So while we have the Canada Pension Plan on the one hand saying, well, we have to go offshore, we have to go around the world, yeah, sure, but to this extent, and then we have a BRICS country coming into Canada and scooping up one of our own wealth managers. So, you know, the irony of it all. But, you know, so that's that, I think, helps also vindicate our view that there's plenty of opportunity here in Canada. It's hard work. It's hard to do, but it's there. And the Inc. Canadian Insider Index, with its 10-year track record, shows that you can do very well in this country, and whether you're an institution or whether you're an individual investor, but, you know, it does take some work. And given that the U.S. market has had such tailwinds over the past couple of decades, you know, eventually those tailwinds are going to dissipate. Hard to say when, but the Canadian market, given the changing geoeconomic situation of the world, where you're going to have more pressure on sourcing resources, where gold is going to be playing, we think, a bigger role in the global financial system by supporting currencies, and it may even be, we'll have to see, gold could even start playing a role in the U.S. Helping support long-term debt issuances. I mean, that's something to watch. That's not a prediction, but there's some people around the Trump movement who are going to promote that. So we'll see if it goes anywhere. But regardless, whether it plays a role in U.S. Financial strategy going forward, we know it's playing a role in the BRICS, and we've seen already in Canada evidence of the financial muscle that the BRICS are having, and that muscle is only going to grow. That's the trend. The trend of the past couple of decades was U.S. dominance of the global financial system. You see that through their dominance in the stock market. Is that trend going to continue for the next decade? Maybe. Is it going to reverse? Maybe. But over the next couple of decades, I think, you know, we're going to see at least a emergence of more opportunities around the world compared to what we've seen in the past couple of decades. And we kind of think that that's happening right now. And we've seen some evidence of that just this past week here in Canada with UAE, the sovereign wealth private equity fund, making a play for Canadian wealth managers. So I think we're off to the races, actually.
If the U.S. is declaring economic war in Canada, should Canada join BRICS?
That's a really good question. You know, BRICS is still defining itself, but it's come a long way. And there's going to be opportunities, I think, for countries who are willing to put aside rhetoric and extreme positions to participate in the type of approach that BRICS is offering. Because the Western media, many in the Western media are framed BRICS as anti-U.S. type of movement. And I think, you know, a lot of that is because China and Russia are heavily involved. But it goes much beyond that. India is not, you know, India is, in my opinion, works to the, you know, to promote India's interests. They are not anti-American interests. They are pro-Indian interests. Same with Brazil. Brazil, it would be a very, and they're a member of the BRICS, it would be a very hard case to make that Brazil is anti-American. They are not. They are, if anything, they, you know, they would probably still align themselves more with the Americans and any other kind of bloc in the world, but they're also a member of BRICS. So there are opportunities to participate with BRICS countries, and I think, you know, Canada should keep that door open. Doesn't necessarily mean I think you have to be a member of it per se, but I think you should keep the door open. I think we should keep the door open to every country, by the way, unless they're very hostile to us. of course, one has to be then realistic. But anyway, that's not necessarily investable right now. But I think certainly for the gold miners, if there are any gold mining CEOs, directors watching, I would definitely think very hard about ensuring that the Canadian government of any stripe understands the important role that Canadian gold mining and base metal mining plays around the world, and how we have to keep those doors open with all countries, and that it's like really critical that we not box ourselves in from opportunities around the world. So, I think there's some homework that the Canadian mining industry could do to ensure that the message sinks in through to all the political parties, all the leaderships, and that goes beyond, waiting for a premier or a prime minister to show up at the annual PDAC convention. I mean, I think the gold mining industry, it would be in their interest to really get a firm message together in terms of why this industry is so important to Canada, why having a vibrant mining industry, being able to extract precious metals and key industrial commodities out of the ground for our own citizens, but also helping other citizens around the world, why that is in Canada's interest. I think they should make that case very forcefully, and I don't believe they're making it now. So that's my two cents of advice to the Canadian mining industry, and I would really encourage them to get their heads around that, because our politicians are going to be under a lot of pressure. We've already seen it, Donald Trump exerting pressure on the Canadian government on the border. This is just starting. He's not even president yet, and he's already kind of sending lightning bolts through Ottawa and other countries. So it's not just Canada. So this is going to be a modus operandi for the next 4 years. It's incumbent upon the industry to stick up for themselves and make sure that Canadians understand and politicians understand why their industry is important for Canada. I mean, look, we've got Doug Ford, who's always talking about the auto industry. Yeah, the auto industry is important, but it's going through structural changes, automation, that the government of Ontario is not going to be able to stop. And, sure, he's going to bat for an industry that is very important to his province, but it's not the only industry. I mean, mining is a major industry in his province, but it could use some attention. The red tape in the Ontario mining industry is still pretty high. And my point is that if you are in the mining industry and you're an executive in the mining industry, it'll be really worth your while, in my opinion, to craft an industry-wide message as to why this industry is so important for the interests of Canadians over the next 2 decades. And part of that relates to the BRICS. The BRICS is growing, and there's going to be stresses between the U.S. and the BRICS. But Canada can play a constructive role there, and mining, can be part of the backbone of our policy towards building bridges between potentially, economic bridges between BRICS and the U.S., via Canada. So there's lots of opportunity there, but it's got to be seized by leadership in the mining industry and in other industries as well. But we're fairly optimistic about how things can go, but things can also take a turn, unexpected turns to limit opportunity as well by bad policy decisions. We just want to make sure that the good policy decisions are made going forward, and sometimes that takes a little bit of work.
Ted, it sounds like the Canada Pension Plan should just be handed over to Inc.
Well, no, I wouldn't. No, I think a good starting point would to have the Canada Pension Plan go before the House of Commons Finance Committee and explain their strategy and explain how they've been able, how their their portfolio is going to be able to deliver exceptional returns for Canadians, because so far we have not seen exceptional returns. We have seen returns, and how one wants to categorize that, I will leave that up to others. But there are a number of issues that I think the House of Commons Finance Committee could dig down with the Canada Pension Plan, so I think that's probably the first stop for the Canada Pension Plan should be have a meeting with the House of Commons Finance Committee to talk about where they're going from here.
Ted, always fun chatting with you.
Well, could there be anything more fun than talking about the House of Commons Finance Committee and plans? But do keep an eye on our insider reports, because there is a lot happening, I think, in energy and in mining. So lots of opportunities, and also cryptocurrencies, like we said, and other industries as well, on a case by case basis. There's entrepreneurs doing great things in Canada and U.S. So let's keep an eye out for those developments in the months ahead.
Ted, one of the questions I have about cryptocurrencies is, how do you make a safe investment or speculation in it? Because all I hear are stories of people who are ripped off by unscrupulous brokers. How do you do it and be secure?
Well, there is a regulatory framework in Canada, right? There are exchanges in Canada that are very tightly regulated. So if you're worried about safety, and I'm not, that's one approach. So you can go to a registered, broker that deals with those, and that's, one way of certainly tackling it. And if you're not doing that, got to be sophisticated enough to handle your own security challenges. And there are, Jim, opening up your inbox for your emails presents security challenges these days, right? By clicking on the wrong email, you can get ripped off. So I don't think being ripped off is unique to cryptocurrencies, but there are a lot of unscrupulous actors in that space that you do have to be on the watch for. So if you're doing it on your own, you really have to be a step above even keeping an eye open for phishing and spam in your inbox. Crypto, you also have to be very vigilant if you're doing your own.
Yeah, those false invoices that pop up in your email.
Sure. Right, or those offers to help get money out of Central Africa? Those are always good classics too.
I feel so sorry for those Nigerian princes. I feel so sorry for them.
And for some reason, they tend to pop up in January and in January right after Christmas. So be on the lookout for those in the new year. But we'll see.
Ted, again, thank you so much for chatting with us.
We'll talk to you again soon.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, his website CanadianInsider.com. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.